Hi, Eddie here. Red and I have used Zencastr to record all of our episodes of Punk Rock Elite because it's easy, browser-based, and it gives us separate tracks that are easy for me to edit. It can also be used for 4K video too. Maybe we'll try that one day. It's really easy to use. It can do a lot of the editing for you, clipping out your ums and ahs, and adding an EQ to bring out the best in your voice, all from a single website. If you want to make a podcast but aren't sure how to go about it, then Zencastr provides everything you need to record, edit, and distribute your new show to Spotify, Apple, and a ton of other places that people get their podcasts. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code PUNKROCKELITE, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Punk Rock Elite, a podcast about NoFX. I mean, we've seen them on the stage loads, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But sometimes they like walk away and they go behind that bit of wall at the back of the stage.
Yeah, and you know, like you'd like to gain access to that area.
It's like, what on earth could they possibly be doing there that they're not doing on the stage? I think they're being secretive and... I looked into this, right, and apparently I filled in the paperwork and I got us a pair of backstage passports.
You haven't.
I have, because that's what we're listening to today, dear listener. Two backstage passports. The reality TV show NoFX was in. I'm just saying that out loud. Sounds dumb.
But it's not.
It's not dumb. It happened. It was a real thing that happened. We've been asked about this a few times. People go, are you going to do the TV show? Yeah. Yeah, we're going to.
We are. We're going to do it in two episode chunks, we think. Each episode is about 21 minutes. So yeah. 41 minutes worth of things to discuss today.
Yes. 21 minutes, which is an hour's worth of American television, as far as I'm aware. It's funny, people go, oh, in the UK you have like series that last like 6 episodes, 8 episodes, 10 episodes. Well, but they're all like 29 minutes long, whereas the US they go, oh, look at this, we've got 22 hour long episodes, and they're all 20 minutes when you take out all the adverts. So it's a different world. So yes, that's what we're doing. We're excited about it, but of course we have to talk about other stuff first, because there's been an actual real-time NoFX development.
Yeah, because you told me this on Messenger yesterday. I wasn't aware of it, and I turned on my YouTube, and there it was, straight in my YouTube recommendations. It had been uploaded 45 minutes previously or something.
Yes, the long-awaited half album, which is a 5-track EP.
Sure.
That's available to like pre-order, save and stuff on the streamers.
I like how they're really rinsing this second double half album idea when like, they aren't loved, guys. You can leave this stuff behind.
I think as we've seen, if Mike gets the bit between his teeth, he doesn't slow down till the race is done.
Yeah, that's very true.
Even if the race appears to be on fire and filled with poison, he doesn't. He's like, well, it's I started the race, so you know.
And we love him for that.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely great. It's continuing the album theme in that it's got the turntable and the cover. You've seen the cover art.
Yeah, the cover's great.
Yeah, it's exactly what it should be. The best comment I saw someone wrote under it: "Is it cake?" Which I thought was very funny.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So, so we have a new NoFX release. Now, I'd heard...
For the listeners that haven't seen the album artwork, it's half half a record. So if you're familiar with the single and double album artwork, yeah. It's basically that, but the album is cut in half. It's half of a vinyl.
A semicircle of wax, on an old school turntable. It's good. Basically, I've heard a couple of versions of "I'm a Rat," which is the name of the song, because there was the NoFXXX box set that was like demos and acoustic versions of several, I think maybe 10 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was released on like Slipcase 7-inch box set thing. And someone uploaded like a rip of all of them to YouTube, and I heard them. And "I'm a Rat," or in a demo form, was on there. And also, the first time I heard it was in the Fat Mike Gets Strung Out thing.
Yeah, which we should do an episode on Fat Mike Gets Strung Out. I noticed that it had appeared on there previously. So now I haven't listened to that, so this is my first time hearing this track.
Well, I think it's a string quintet playing various NoFX songs, and he included "I'm a Rat."
So they're not originals for the album.
No.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. No.
They are, I think Total Bummer from sure. Valum. Yeah. I think he worked on it with Baz the Orchestral Decline fame, and I think they put their heads together as to what would make the best quintet style arrangements. So the first time I heard "I'm a Rat," I heard it absent of drums, guitar, and vocals, and just had it on strings, and I thought, yes, that's fine. I'm not great with classical music in the sense that if I'm listening to a classical version of a song that exists otherwise,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find I'm trying to find the hook rather than listening to it as a piece by itself. I'm not very, my ears aren't trained enough to do that. So, yeah, "I'm a Rat." There's a video, music video available, which is Steamboat Willie, the recently public domained origin of Mickey Mouse thing going on. That's fine. We can talk about that. But yeah, what did you reckon to the song?
I think it's an interesting song. I appreciate the video. I like how they do videos at the moment. They just kind of like chuck them together. There's like a very DIY, what can we do in the shortest amount of time that doesn't look terrible. Yep. Sort of thing, and I think that's what they've done with the Steamboat Fatty idea. Yep. I think it's great. Obviously, it's just become public domain, this image of Mickey Mouse, so I quite like that. I think it's very in line with single and double album, but I think it's on the better side of that. You know, like how I've said previously, in double and single album, I think there are individual tracks that are really interesting. They're like the next sound of NoFX, and what I find disappointing with those albums is they have those tracks alongside stuff that I think sounds like regressive NoFX. I think they've got some really interesting new sounding stuff next to some older, more derivative stuff. But this I think is really interesting. You know, like I think it's more in line with, you know, like Darby Crashing Your House Party.
Darby Crashing Your Party, yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. It, you know, like it reminds me of that, you know, like Doors and Fours, you know, like all of the good stuff from single and double album. Not my favorite NoFX track, but I think it's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, I had it shown up on single or double in place of one of the less good songs on there. Mm-hmm. I think it would have elevated that album significantly.
Yeah.
If you'd taken out the Stephen Hawking song, that's low hanging fruit, but you know what I mean? If you'd taken out that song and put that in instead, it may not leave such a sour taste. I think musically there's no surprises, but also no real disappointment. It's the drums are fast, the guitars sound good. There's some really good vocal harmony stuff going on in there. I think, as always, a lot of time is spent devoted to trying to work out precisely what Fat Mike is getting at. Mm-hmm. What is it that he's thinking? What is it that he's saying? Because sometimes he's glib, sometimes he's outright clear. And in this one, he seems to be saying that he's tricked everyone into thinking that he's not behaving precisely the way he was when everyone was saying, hey, Mike, you might want to tone that down. Mm-hmm. I'm just sort of unsure as to what's... anyway, that's maybe for a deeper dive. But because I've not spent very much time with it, I've listened to it a handful of times.
I think what's really interesting, because both with the lyrics in the song and the video of the song, there just seems to be a lot of conflating rats with mice. Because a lot of it is about how, you know, I'm a rat. But then it's about, like, being addicted to eating cheese, which is much more of a mouse thing. And then obviously the video is Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really like a huge problem. It's not like the deepest of artistic criticisms you're going to hear, but it's just quite interesting. I don't know. Rats aren't mice, Mike.
You think Mike has rodent blindness?
Yeah. Fat mice.
Fat mice. That's all a rat is, right?
Right, yeah. But like that should be in the song. Not all this cheese shit.
Yeah. I mean I'm a rat and I'm addicted to cheese. I mean drugs, guys.
Yeah, right. I know, yeah. And that's again, like, it reminds, you know, those are the things that disappointed us with Single and Double Album. It's sort of like, I feel like the metaphors aren't as good as they used to be. You know, like First Call on Coaster is just a song about, you know, him going down to First Call and drinking lots of alcohol. And
it's about an all-nighter. It's about a 24-hour job, you know.
But it is so well written. Like, neither of us are drinkers, but we think it's a fantastic song because it's just structurally.
I mean, I have been, but...
Yeah, same. But like structurally, it's got a lot to it. There's some really good writing. And I do
the
find...
The arrangement's really cool. Like that stabby... I think it was the moment I heard that stabby guitar on First Call. It just... The guitar sounds so good and abrasive. It's really great.
And it's a sort of song that you wouldn't expect to hear a guitar solo on, and it's got one of the best guitar solos on the album.
Yeah.
And then, like, with this, I just don't think he's making the effort with his writing in the way that he used to. And I hate saying stuff like that.
No.
Because, you know, who the fuck am I?
Well, I mean, there is... That's how I feel as well, because I sort of... It's like... you know on First Ditch Effort, where you've got... on the CD version, you have at the end of Oxymoronic, which for me is not a high point of the album. But there's an outtake at the end where he's talking with the producer. I think it's Jeff Cameron.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's his name. If not, I apologize. And he's sort of working on the lyrics, and he's like, now most of your house is hydroponic.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he goes,
yeah.
What do you mean most of? He goes, well, he's made most of his house. Well, what does that mean?
Why
hasn't he made it all hydroponic? He goes, because he lives there. He's like, that means nothing. That's, you know, he goes, now your mom's house is hydroponic. He goes, there, thank you. About time you put some fucking effort in, Mike. And he's joking. He's like, but.
but where was
that guy?
That was the start of the slippery slope, wasn't it? Because, hey, we like most of First Ditch Effort, not a huge fan of Oxymoronic, which is the song that's taken from.
Yeah.
But like, it feels like that was maybe the start of the decline.
Well, he got his. I think that when Mike has sort of been kind of alienated from, I mean, a lot of people have been, so the pandemic and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the pandemic did a number on him, because he's quite a social guy. He's a social creature. And so that kind of thing. And so, but just seeing that where there was a producer who was like, mate, that sounds, it's nothing. It's like saying kind of. it's nothing. It's just pointless. And so Mike goes, all right, what about this thing? He goes, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that kind of interaction happened. And I'm not speaking just about I'm a Rat. I'm saying, like, with the last two, the single, double, with the albums, I guess.
And I want to give him, like, all the benefit of the doubt, because the fact is that Mike is busy with the Punk Rock Museum. He's got a lot of other projects on the go. When he's been writing for NoFX previously, that's been his main gig. Like, he's been working on NoFX and that's his main focus. In a lot of cases, it's been his only focus.
Yeah.
And I think these days he's got a lot of other stuff on, you know, like Fat Wreck and the Punk Rock Museum, and obviously the world tour, his final world tour. He's got a lot on his plate. And so I think it would be unfair of us to expect, I mean, like, we love a lot of NoFX's and Fat Mike's work. I mean, like, we
love a lot of
favorite music.
Other people are going, yeah, I'm not bothered about that. We go, shut up, mate. That is the best bit. You know, we are not dismissive, likely.
But I'd love to hear, you know, audiences' views on this as well. Like, what do you think of the new NoFX track? Because I like it. It's not setting my world on fire, but I'm enjoying it. And I'd love to hear what the general view of it is. Because I would have thought that I can't see many NoFX fans being like, oh, a return to form. Or, oh, yeah, this is the NoFX I really like. Or, oh, this is new and interesting. I don't know. Like,
it's none of those things, is it? I can hear people going, I thought it was cool. Because it's fast. It's fun. It's catchy. You know, it's like I say, all of the bits of it are like good NoFX, all of the bits of it, but it feels it feels like it's been stagnant. But then I don't know when these were written, because all of Single and Double were written at the same time, and most of it was written before they even released West Coast versus Wessex, which is a million years ago now. So these have been stagnating. I don't know if this is from a new batch of songs, to be fair. I couldn't say, but it feels like they're all drawn from the same well.
I think as well, like, I get the feeling, like, from Second Double and now Half Album, that these are songs that aren't being written to be performed live. They feel like they are very much songs to be written to go on to an album. Like, there's something that, I don't know, like, I think that this would sound odd live. I don't think that you would get the best version of this song live. I think it's going to sound better on an album. I think it's more engineered, you know, it's more produced and processed than their live sound.
Yeah, maybe. Because, I mean, I suppose we don't really get anything. We don't get a whole lot past First Ditch Effort live anymore, do we? And
get off of First Ditch Effort live as well? We don't get much of it.
6 years on Dope.
Yeah, of course.
And that, but I think pretty much only 6 years on Dope. Weird. Oh, I'm so sorry, Tony.
Okay, yeah.
That happens live a few times. So two at most. But they're not playing Sid and Nancy live, which is a travesty.
Yeah, that is silly.
They're not doing Transvestite. They're not doing, you know,
I Don't Like Me Anymore.
Any of that stuff. No, any of those cool things. So, so yeah. And then, I mean, so yeah, so that's an interesting one, because we brought this up and we spent quite a lot of time talking about it, but that's because, no, but that's fine, because we have had several people get in touch and say, there's a new NoFX song. Are you going to talk about it? Yes,
we are.
So yes, we are. Greg from Jersey. Thank you. That was one of the Greg's been in touch again. Got an email from Greg. Thank you, Greg. Yes. Well, those are our thoughts. Greg,
yeah, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah, Greg sent this yesterday as of day of recording. And then Greg also asked a question about, firstly, gave a compliment to Blags, saying, podcast with the band last week was great. Loved their insights on the band. So, yep.
Agree. They were great.
Viva Blagged, Paris Siempre. and then also, how is the NoFX tribute album going to be released? Streaming? Yes, definitely. I think it'll definitely be on the streamers, and it'll definitely be on Bandcamp. We are still trying to work out what physical form the release will take, because I don't know if you've seen, but vinyl is expensive. And, you know, CDs are not so fashionable, but but you'll definitely be able to get it digitally. We'd love to have physical releases because that's how we grew up consuming media, and we're not ready to give that up any more than we have. So, and also, you know, if I'm going to be on an actual album that's been released, I want a copy of it to never play on my on my shelf. Because, you know, we're old. But thank you for getting in touch, Greg. Nice to hear from you again. There's all that. And actually, we'll talk about the rest of the album stuff in the outro, because we should probably, I understand, we've just been called to the departure lounge.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
So we're going to just head over. Our bags have been checked. We're going to set off on our tour. So we've got tickets, money, backstage passports coming up after the sting. Backstage passport. Sorry, Redcar.
I was going to say it would have been good then if you just played a little bit of Sting.
Would it have been good?
I would have enjoyed it.
Fair enough.
Singularly.
Yeah. I'd have enjoyed the conceit, but we'll see about that. Mm. All right. So, Backstage Passport. This was a 2008 TV series. It ran on the Fuse channel.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought it was MTV.
No, it was Fuse, the cool version of MTV. And by cool, I mean much less successful. So that was that. It was interesting because I believe the documentarian Jeffa Lewis, he was the one who was responsible for all the filming and stuff. And NoFX had such a nice time with him that when Fuse didn't order a second series, they just went ahead and made one themselves. So series two of this is just something they did off their own back. And Jeffa Lewis is also the fourth, he's credited with writing Hepatitis Bathtub.
Oh, interesting.
Because he conducted all of the interviews, the hours and hours and hours of interviews, sifted it all through, and then wrote it up, and then gave it to the band, and they said, and basically signed off on it. So he sort of formed all that. So he's a documentarian of NoFX, really. So well done, yeah. Jeffa Lewis. So yeah, it took place in 2008, or so it was aired in 2008. So I believe the most recent album would have been Wolves.
Yeah.
They were going to release Coaster the following year, 2009, which is why most of the music that you hear throughout it, there's the latest song they do is Triple Rock.
Yeah.
In the soundtrack. So it is an 8-part documentary about NoFX embarking upon a massive world tour. Ooh, sounds familiar, doesn't it? Yes, that's what they're doing now. It's quite timely.
Yeah.
So the idea being is that they're getting quite old. They don't know how long they're going to be in the band because some of them have reached 40 by this point.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, this is the last time we're going to go to some of these countries, including Russia. It's like, yeah, they're probably not touring Russia anytime soon. That's just world politics for you. But they decide they're going to go to the Middle East. They're going to go to Asia and South America, which is where we start with several South Americans. We're going to be talking about episodes 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hadn't seen this before, had you?
I hadn't. Thankfully, all available on YouTube. So if you haven't seen them yourselves and you'd like to, they are available with a very, very quick cursory search.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen these either. And pleasantly surprised. Look, I mean, we spent, a lot of recent episodes, you know, like we've gone through Things that haven't been our favourites of NoFX's output, you know, single, double album, more recently the latest single off of Half Album, and, you know, like Mike's own album as Cokie the Clown and Home Street Home Musical. Like, we've done a lot of stuff that isn't my favourite NoFX. Some of it's fine, some of it's not. What's really nice and refreshing is to get back to some, you know, like some of their better output. Like, I've really enjoyed watching this.
This feels like a period of NoFX in their stride.
Absolutely, yeah.
Certainly, I think of this post-errorism, post-Wolves, pre-Coaster. No slight on Coaster. I'm just thinking about the time. Because I was, at this time, I remember watching these in my flat in Madrid. Because basically any non-Spanish media, we had to download. We had to, like, find, you know, torrents and shit. And so we would have, me and my flatmate Pete, we would have our, oh, it's Tuesday, which means last night, whatever was on telly, so we can find that. And so it was a case of, you know, we had lots of folders on our laptops, and then we would pass the HDMI cable between us for, you know, whatever we were going to watch. And I said, oh, NoFX have got a TV show. And Pete went, oh, that sounds fun. Because Pete had seen NoFX a few times, really enjoyed, you know, he got into them by watching them live at festivals and stuff.
Oh, great.
He went, oh, wow, these guys are fun. He's more of a metal guy, but he's like, nah, I can get on with this NoFX. So we watched it in Madrid, and I remember being slightly annoyed at just those things like coming up on Backstage Passport.
Sure.
Previously on Backstage Passport. It's like, there's been an advert break of about 6 minutes, and you're going, previously, and it's like, oh, come
yeah,
on.
It's American TV for you.
It is just American TV, and so, but I remember being annoyed, like, it's 20 minutes, and like six of them is just repeated bits of, oh, we're going away, oh, planes, and it's, but I'm a calmer, more rational person these days, but I just remember thinking, this is the most we've got to sort of spend time with NoFX to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty intriguing. And I like all of the talking heads and stuff, because I like how they sort of go, they show you something going on in Chile, and then they cut back to a studio where Hefe's like, oh, and mad shit was happening. But he's like kind of really sort of expressive and performative. And it cuts to Melvin, who was like, yeah, that was a pretty big show. Like, just really, it's really, really sweet how you get to know them. So, So we start off episode one, where they're talking about the Unusual Place tour that they're going on.
Yeah.
Right. First off, the theme is a banger.
Yeah. Right. And I wondered if it featured on anything, you know, like any like B-sides album or anything like that.
They did a Backstage Passport EP.
Right.
It's a really, really good bit of short, fast NoFX. It could have been on on one of their EPs or something. But yeah,
easily.
So start off, Fat Mike introduces the band, or introduces the concept of the band, by saying the history of their touring. They're the biggest independent punk band. Mike used to book everything using stolen credit card numbers, you know, and all this kind of thing, just like with a telephone, like a phone box, sounds like it anyway. Just call up a place and book a tour. And then there's some like footage. I mean, the footage is straight off the, and we should really look at it, the 10 years of fucking up video they put out, which was just a lot of video footage of the first 10 years of them being a band. And it's unlistenable in many, many ways, but really fun. But we should have a look at that one day. We'll make a note. So the first two episodes focus heavily on South America. So they're going to South America. And Kent, we meet Kent, the manager.
Yeah.
The favorite of Frank Turner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Favorite member. And you do see what an integral piece of the machine this guy is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
He's, and he still does their sound to this day, even though he's not their manager anymore. And I imagine his life and his blood pressure are a lot more calm as a result of this.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels like to me he's probably, because he's quite an old school manager. He's like, I know this came out in 2008, But you know, like that's only really around the time of like the emergence of social media. Like I think, you know, like I think like Facebook becomes accessible like globally, like 2006 or something like that, maybe 2005. Yeah, yeah.
And we're looking at 2006 and 7 for the planning and execution of this, because obviously it came out in 2008, so a lot of this would have happened in 2007 at the latest, probably.
Absolutely. But he's very much like, he's a phone calls guy. Like he doesn't even seem to really be using email. He's either texting people or phone calling people.
He does talk about emails in certain bits of it, but yeah, he's got, you see in episode 2 where he's texting with G.A. Walker.
Yeah.
And he shows his flip phone with the text message on it, and you're like, right? Oh, these guys are doing it without like Google Maps in their pocket and shit, and it's easy to forget.
Like, I work in a venue. I work at Leadmill, which people may know. I mentioned it on the podcast before, but that means that I work in a room full of live promoters and bookers. So, like, people who are booking tours or talking to tour managers and tour agents, and it's just like so interesting seeing how different that world is in 2008, where it is just like it feels so analog. I know, like, there's plenty of digital stuff around 2008. I mean, I think the iPod had been released, but like, it still feels so analog compared to today, where you are, you know, you might FaceTime a tour manager or something.
I think also that smartphones didn't take off in the US.
No,
even
not
as quickly. I mean, there was the iPhone and that was it. Android hadn't picked up, you know.
But I don't think, I don't think it was an iPhone. I think it was the iPod.
There's no smartphones here.
Yeah.
That you could get email on your phone through WAP.
Yeah.
The original WAP. I don't know if anyone, which is why when that song came out, I remember, I think my dad used to get email on his phone through that. Now I know what he was getting emails about, dirty boy. And so they're pointing at a globe going, all right, we're going to go here, we're going to go here, we're going to go here. And Kent's going to make it happen. And Kent's like, yep. He's stressed to fuck as it's all on him.
They go to some precarious venues.
And venue is a very strong word. we're really stretching the word venue to its extent. I'll tell you what, one thing I didn't realize from the first time I watched it, because I don't think I've rewatched it. There were just bits that stuck in my head, such as manager and various things like that. It was that in some cases they arrive at a place and then they go, oh yeah, the gig didn't happen. And then that was it. They spend less than a minute in like Bogota or wherever. They're like, oh, we're going to Colombia. And Mike's all excited about Colombia because he's excited about the cocaine. So he goes, we're going to the source, Colombia. And they go, oh yeah, the venue didn't know that we were playing, so we didn't. And then it just cuts. But I assume Fuse didn't want, you know, the night they spent there, where Mike's going, oh, isn't this cocaine brilliant? Cocaine.
It's weird because, like, I've had experiences like this in, you know, like coming up as a comic, where like you'll turn up to do a gig, and sometimes it just doesn't happen, you know, like to multiple different errors, and then you just drive home. But you know, like at that level of comedy, you know, like it's either an unpaid spot or I'm getting £100 or something, and they'll pay you to leave. In this instance, like it's an international tour with like one of the world's biggest independent punk band, and it just feels so odd how precarious it is, even though like they're really successful at this point. They're at like their peak of their fame.
Yeah, well, the thing I think is interesting is they talk about like there's 2,000 kids out there who've each paid $20 or the equivalent of $20 for their ticket. But with it, with them being such sort of, a lot of these places have a very poor reputation for corruption. And it's like, and we'll get to that, but you know, it's like, oh no, you need to get all of the permits and then bribe the local authority to not shut it down. It's like, it's just becomes an extra fee. It's just like a tariff. It's like, that's how it gets sort of treated out there. And there's, I mean... even to be honest, you know, we can sit here in our safe European homes and say that, but I mean, the same shit happens in Italy, so it's not even like this is an unusual concept. In general, lots of places are like that, but they're like, well, you know, we normally work with reputable people, but we don't know any promoters, so we're just having to sort of go, does anyone know anyone who might be able to do this? So presumably he was just texting around everyone, but no one went to South America for these things. You know, it's when people did, everyone would turn up because there was a live, it was like an American show, an American band was playing. So people go, yeah, I want to see that. It may never come back again. So yeah, it's pretty mad. We get the most sort of intimate portraits of the band in this next section, because we go to the band members' houses as they prepare to go away.
Yeah,
and this is interesting because some people are being genuine and some people are clearly hamming it up for the camera, pointing at no jefes. So we start off at Mike's house. He's there with his little girl Darla and his wife Erin. Now, the thing that makes me feel slightly sick, we see Darla here, who is 2, I think.
Yeah.
When we saw NoFX in June, Mike pointed to his daughter. Oh, my daughter's here, pointed to the side of the stage, as a woman very clearly, like, getting on for 20 years old. It's like, she was, like, in her late teens, and I was like...
Early 20s,
This is an old program now. It's like 2008 doesn't sound old, and then you remember that's, like, 16, 17 years ago. It's like
horrid, isn't it? Horrid.
What a dreadful way to exist. So, nothing against her, just the mere passage of time. She happens to represent that passage of time. So, so little girl and Erin, his then wife, both upset about leaving. Mm-hmm. Basically, she's like going, I don't want daddy to go. She's like really sad about it, and mm-hmm. 2, so she can't fully express it. And Erin's clearly upset, as we find out later. She's not thrilled about Mike going off to lunatic places. But Mike immediately cheers himself up by showing us his pill collection.
Yeah.
It cuts straight to him filling a bag with various pills.
My first note from this first episode is, what are they packing? Because as you said, it starts with Mike and his drugs, which doesn't make any sense to me, and it does actually come back round because I've watched past episode 2, and the medication does appear again in later episode. But I was thinking, like, why would you pack medications for this international tour where you're famously going to places like, I mean, you're going to South Asia, where generally there aren't South Asian countries where drugs are cool. There are places in South Asian countries where you can get drugs and that's fine. Right. But like, if the authorities get a hold of you or witness you taking drugs in most South Asian countries, you're absolutely fucked.
Possibly to the point of execution, although...
Which, again, they find out later. Yes.
Although I think that is rarely implemented on foreign nationals to avoid international issues. Yes. They will fine you and maybe imprison you if you were dealing, but if it's just for personal use, they will fine you heavily and probably boot you out of the country.
Spoilers, none of NoFX are beheaded.
No. Do you know what? They all came back out. They didn't even get a haircut. So, you know, it's fine.
But what really blows me away, because I know, you know, Mike's packing is odd. I don't think that you need all of those medications, and I don't think that you'll get most of those medications through all of the customs that you're going to be going through. Yep. But the one that really, I'm like, what are you doing? Is Hefe, just with a suitcase full of, like, Pop-Tarts and Twinkies. Like, what are you doing?
Now, you see, I think that's where he's going, oh, wouldn't it be funny if all I did was like pack food instead of
shirts.
I
hope so.
I think it is because he talks about how he doesn't get on with the food in foreign countries. He's not very adventurous with his palate, etc. So, I mean, I think all the junk food, you know, the Pop-Tarts and the Oreos and all of that stuff. I think
he's going to South America for the first bit. He should be all right. You know, like, I would imagine that he's a fan of like Central American cuisine.
Perhaps, but...
Or is that racist?
It's kind of racist.
Fair enough.
You did say it with a whole face full of blackface as well, but
wow.
But that's how we feel most comfortable recording these. Come on, guys, we're edgy. I think he's putting that on.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'd be very surprised if he was like serious about that. But also, a lot of those pills aren't even like recreational drugs. He's like, oh, this is like a sort of a sleeping pill,
and
like, oh, this is Advil. This is one of these things, and there's Valium and stuff. But
I think that's more the culture in the US, though. Like, much more of an over the counter culture.
Yeah, you can buy stuff over the counter. Although you can't get codeine, which you can in the UK, which people find insane. You can just buy that. Oh no, it's over the counter. But
we have to get our Valiums on the dark web, so you know.
That's true.
Swings and roundabouts.
Gotta go. Silk Road. That still exists? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. It was a documentary I saw about it. I went, wow, that is fun. Hello, everyone. Eddie here. Red and I hope you're enjoying our show. If you have been and would like to help us make it a little more easily, then you can donate to us at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/punkrockelite. Or you can look in the show notes for our link tree. If you can't help us financially, we totally understand, but would love it if you spread the word to other people who would like this podcast. We thank you for your continued support. We massively appreciate it. Back to the show. Melvin is packing himself his accordion, which he appears totally unfamiliar with.
Yeah. I love that bit that Mike says when he's like... me and Eric Melvin have been friends since we were kids. We've been playing guitar since we were like 16 years old. And in that time, I've got a lot better.
Yeah. I think it is slightly unfair, but it is very, very funny.
I think it is.
I don't think Melvin is bad on guitar at all. I think he is the most prone to rust.
Yeah.
I think he needs a much bigger run up.
Well, also
getting up to speed. I think.
I say this from a place of knowledge because I think that we've been doing band rehearsals because of this tribute album that we're working on.
Yeah.
We've been playing together with the lads from the Midlife Punk podcast, and I think I end up filling the Melvin role in that I play mostly rhythm guitar, and I understand why Melvin is prone to rust because you're not doing the difficult stuff. Like when we go and rehearse the songs we're doing, Laurie Myers and The Bruise, like it's not too difficult for me. And then I look over at Tom, who is on drums, who is doing some actual work. And I can see why Melvin is prone to rust. He's just got some power chords to fuck about with. He's not got big guitar solos. He's got a couple songs to sing, but he's not... You know, his stuff is easier, so he can fuck about more.
Yeah, exactly. It's you can wing it a lot more easily. Now we move on to the guy who I consistently enjoy the most in this series, Smelly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I can't remember everything. Because I've only watched the first two episodes. I watched them once through without, just by watching them. Second time I was making notes, and the third time, just before we recorded this, I watched them through at 1.75 speed on YouTube, just to pick up anything I missed, just to have them fresh in the head. And what I've learned from that is that if you listen to Anarchy Camp at 1.75, it becomes an absolute fucking ska banger. So Smelly shaves his head before every tour. Apparently that's his ritual. He cuts his hair down, and then his wife helps, and then gouges a bit out of the back of his hair, not his head, but and then he tries to shave her head, and it's all fun. Smelly he's always saying this throughout the whole thing. He's like, I'm really excited to go to sketchy, dangerous, weird places. He's like, he is hoping for mad shit to happen.
Yeah, which is interesting because, like, obviously for a lot of the drugs-based mad shit, he's understandably nowhere to be seen because he's sober at the time. And yep. like, respect to him for getting through this tour. Like, I know that he has words with the band later in their career, but like, this tour in terms of like drug yep. use.
Mm. Oh, wait till you see season two.
Great. I can't
Cause
wait.
Because that wasn't going out on a TV channel.
Sure. Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, episode three, which we'll get to in the next few weeks, like, some serious drug...
Singapore?
Yeah. I was surprised the level of drug taking on television that they were allowed to get away with. Like, they didn't even, like, blur what they are doing. And that does surprise me for television.
Yes, I know. And so get on this before YouTube takes it down for the flagrant drug use.
I remember, like, and I suppose it would have been a little bit before this, but you know, like the Osbournes, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when that went out and they were talking about drug taking and that, like, they really did, like, blur, like, it would be, they wouldn't show it happening. They would be like, oh, Jack did some drugs in a club last night and got arrested, and they wouldn't show any of the footage from the night. They would like show him just like being pushed into a police van, but they would never show any footage of drug taking. They wouldn't dream of it.
Oh, what are you doing, taking drugs? You know, look at me. I don't know why you're taking them. You know, but it should be an example to you. You know.
Oh, I should mention to our guests, we do actually have Ozzy in the studio today.
But Ozzy's always here. I just fucking love NoFX, you know what I mean? They're like, you know, they're really fast. I don't know what they're saying, like, you know, it's too fast for them, but you know.
Sharon Osbourne owed us some money. She can't pay it, so she's just given us her husband.
Yeah, as collateral.
Yeah. It's been months.
Stinks.
I know, we really should wash him. So, Hefe packs some snacks and does... what I like is he's trying to get his wife in on the bit, and she's just stood there like,
yeah.
Yep. He does this all the time, you know. She can't wait for him to go on tour. Bless him. So we're sort of cutting back around again. And so Erin is revealed just how concerned she is. She's like, Mike doesn't take care of himself, and now he's going to dangerous places.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really concerned. And his little girl is like, she knows that her dad's going away and she doesn't like it, and it's really, really sad. It's like utterly heartbreaking.
It must be tough and a pretty thankless life being the wife of a touring musician.
Yes, absolutely, I believe so.
Or husband.
Or husband. So we leave the first part, we leave that break on a sad little girl. Because that's what I want from this tour documentary.
But then Kent gets drunk.
Yay, we get to Brazil, the first stop on the tour, and the Rio Hotel. Kent is absolutely bollocksed, and it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Really, really drunk.
He headbutts the glass door. That's very funny. He like runs into it like a battering ram. Smelly is kind of annoyed. He's like, the fuck is this guy doing? And Melvin thinks it's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
He's like, the guy's got four jobs, clearly just broke on the plane. This is where Kent becomes his own meme, where he goes, manager.
Yeah.
Charge of everything. It's great. He also has my favorite line of the episode. We're going to see Jesus, then we'll eat a big lunch. It's going to be gnarly. Brilliant.
That, I mean, that is what you want from Brazil.
At Rio, Jesus and a big lunch. Absolutely, yeah. Christ the Redeemer, big buffet. That's what you want. He's basically abandoned in his hotel room. They just put him on the floor with a pillow under his head and go, just fucking sort it. Right. And then Kent's wife starts texting people, other members of the crew going, hey, not heard from Kent. I'd love to get an update. And this is like treated as like a joke, and it's never confirmed that she's been comforted or reassured. So there's loads of like, you know that joke in Austin Powers where they kill the henchman and then they deliver the message to the henchman's wife?
Yeah.
It's like that. All of these sort of hanging threads of, well, does she ever find out that Kent's okay? Presumably, but... yeah, so we cut to the show is about to start, right?
At least this one happens.
It does, yeah. It happens. Not great, because Melvin is like, I don't know how to play the accordion. Melvin and Smelly are like, yeah, we don't practice because we're lazy. And now they're all paying the price for that. But the crowd looks fucking wild.
I'm really surprised that they don't. I mean, I think they do these days. I know they do these days because we spoke to Karina about it. But like, that they wouldn't do extensive rehearsals before going on tour. Like, what are you doing? Like, you have to rehearse before you go on tour, but they just didn't for this one.
No, I don't think they do for most of them. They
what?
I know. It is mental, isn't it? You'd think.
I know that they do now. Like, but I think that might be because with the 40 songs in 40 cities, they're doing albums and they're like revisiting songs that they don't do all of the time.
Some I think they've never done.
Yeah, I think they did a lot of rehearsals. My understanding is they did a lot of rehearsals for this tour.
And then on their Instagram, they would show them, they go, oh, we've just arrived in France and we've got ourselves a rehearsal studio.
Yeah, they were going straight to rehearsal rooms as soon as they landed in countries and stuff like that. Yeah. I saw a lot of that.
And it was really, really good. And that's why they're a lot better on this tour than they have been possibly ever. That's it. So the crowd looks really, really wild. Kent has had a bit of a sleep and they go, how are you, Kent? And he just goes, I'm coming along. And it's great. So they start off all right. And then Melvin's guitar goes out.
Immediately.
And it takes them 5-10 minutes to fix it. And then he starts fucking around with it again.
And it breaks. And like Mike has to have a real chat with like an actual, this isn't okay. And this isn't how NoFX do. Because he's saying, you know, like, if you would have just gone through the amp, you know, like, you know, we would have had to have stopped, but you would have been able to get it going again. And like, I think what's really funny, because like when Mike pulls him to one side at the end of the show, he's like, and you're like messing with your tuner. Like, do you remember when we used to record albums without a tuner?
And we do.
Great point, Mike.
You can listen to our episodes on all of those albums. But Melvin gets the arsehole, starts going, oh, what, you got somewhere else to be? And it's like, I would not want to be on the wrong side of that crowd.
Yeah.
They're insane.
Yeah, and it's a big crowd. And it's not like gigs are these days. I think like gigs are so tame compared to what these gigs were in 2008. I mean,
and in 2008, people were going, these are pussy ass gigs for pussies. These days. It's like, yeah, so God knows what was going on.
Like, health and safety wise, these.
We're also dealing with South America where these things are optional. I don't want to be dismissive, but I mean, it just is that they do not have directives and standards like that. They are basically up to you.
Like they're keeping their operational costs low. I mean, there's not every week that a band this size comes through these places. So like these aren't venues that I think are getting loads of regular shows. I'm sure they'll be getting the odd show, but like so they'll be keeping costs down because it must be difficult to make a profit even from these shows.
This is where Mike says, well, Brazil was supposed to be like the safety net because this is where we had a reputable booker, someone that we knew about, promoter, venue, all of these, because it does look like the most obvious venue.
Yeah,
it looks balcony. Yeah. It looks like it's actually a theater where stuff happens.
Absolutely.
So they're like, this was supposed to be the okay. Let's get a good one under our belt and carry on, and hopefully carry that wave. And it was like because of the guitar tech stuff, it's like, well, that just went down. This is my favorite bit. They go to Bogota, cancelled because of a dodgy promoter. Promoter fears for their lives, the lives of his family and all this stuff.
Like, what is going on here?
And there's no closure to that story.
None.
No one finds out what happens. He's like, oh, we got there. We got to Colombia, went to Bogota, got in touch with the venue. And they're like, we don't have any clue. They've got a South American sort of promoter guy called Carlos, who's doing a lot of he's basically doing all of the bilingual communication. And he's saying, they have no idea of any kind of NoFX gig that's supposed to happen, but they've paid the bonds and they've got, you know, all, or they haven't, there's all of these things have gone on. And then he's like, we've not heard anything from this promoter. So left him a message saying, yeah, sorry, nope, not doing it. This is ridiculous. As soon as they leave that, he's suddenly coming through going, oh, I fear for the lives of my mother and my sister. People are being, you know, I think the other guy is dead. Because if you make a mistake in Colombia, then you get murdered and stuff. And maybe it depends who you're dealing with. I'm sure there are plenty of people who, and this is, I think this is before Colombia legalized cocaine.
Yeah.
Which means that a lot of it, you know, that it was even more sort of, you know, it was worse for that kind of thing. So depending on who he approached to get the money to run the gig and promised, made people promises and stuff, it's very possible, but equally, we just don't find out.
Yeah, no, we don't.
And I find that really, really weird and a bit disconcerting. And that's the first time I noticed it watching it this time around. Was going, did they just go, oh, okay, well, best of luck with not dying. Bye.
It does feel like that. I think, you know, like, I think one thing that they do underplay in the show is like, if you fuck up one date, like if you know, like you end up trapped in Colombia, then you can't do the rest of the tour.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're trying to avoid. I think they're trying to avoid issues that would affect all of the other dates. So if they're like, hey, if this one tour date isn't looking like it's going to happen, let's ditch this one and make sure we definitely get to the next one.
Yeah.
But I don't think that is vocalized in the episode.
No, that's what I assume, is that they're like, okay, we will just go from Brazil to Chile.
Yeah.
We will not go to Colombia. And then, you know, we know, yeah, like you say, it's just like, okay, well, we don't need to do that stop. So just.
But I wonder, like, are they happy to not go and do that? Because they don't seem too bothered by it. They're like, oh, well. But, like, are they not that bothered because they're doing the documentary and they feel like the documentary is more important than the actual doing of the tour? Like, if they were just on a tour without this documentary, would they be more annoyed? Like, because it feels like it would be a completely wasted trip if they weren't being filmed. You know, like, it becomes a bit of a story.
I mean, I think for someone like, I mean, the crew are getting paid.
Yeah.
They're doing their job just slightly harder than usual because they're not going to Anaheim or somewhere in Ohio or whatever, you know, where everything's a lot more smooth and they understand it and they've done it before. With the band, I assume they're getting paid in some way, shape or form, but also they're also making this documentary thing, so they're presumably thinking, well, we'll sell that, or Fuse has given us some money towards that, or whatever that situation is as well. So I mean, Smelly is just like, I'm just looking for the adventure.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them are like that. Mike's saying, you know, playing shows in the US and Europe isn't exciting anymore because it's very, very much the same, you know, a lot of Ticketmaster venues, and he doesn't say any of this, but I'm just sort of, you know, extrapolating. Whereas it used to be weird and exciting when we just used to play outside by a lake or, you know, house parties and shit like that. That's what they're sort of doing it for. And also at this point, I imagine they're probably as well off as they've ever been.
Yeah.
I imagine this is like the next level of comfort for them financially, like for the members of the band. So we get to Chile. Fans have clocked where they're getting in. They're banging on the van. They're like super excited. Like, they are fucking crazy. Really, really going for it.
Yeah.
And that's the gig where the kids are jumping off the balcony, and the balcony is empty, and the floor is just full of, like, it every single one of them has come down off the balcony. It's like, that's just wild.
It's in a venue where clearly the general standing tickets are on the bottom floor. They'll be more expensive than the balcony seats. So a lot of kids have bought the balcony seats, but they're just jumping off of the balcony down into general admission.
Or I assume, I don't know if it's more expensive or what, but the floor just sold out.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, I'm getting a ticket anyway. I'll just jump down.
Yeah.
And they're jumping down, and it's not
And no one is stopping them.
No. I mean, I wouldn't.
No.
If I was on security there, I'd be just like, just make sure all the doors are like open. just in case anyone needs to get out. But yeah, that one appears to have gone really, really nicely.
A lot of stage invasions and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, everyone's like hanging off of their necks and stuff. Someone's putting Hefe in a sleeper hold. Yeah, you know, absolutely. They really, really like it. Melvin was like, I feared for my own safety for a bit. It's like, you're fine. Don't worry about it, love. Yeah, it was, that one looked, I mean, as a 40-year-old, I felt legit uncomfortable watching that. When I watched this in my 20s, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, this is cool. But Chile looked insane. And that's the end of the first episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So second episode after the previously ons, we get to Ecuador.
Yeah.
Now, Ecuador, we see virtually nothing of. We see a tiny flash of a house because it turns out that the way they got a gig in Ecuador was some rich kids basically booked them for a private party.
For their like country club.
Yeah.
What kids have a country club? I was so confused by that premise.
A friend of mine, Juan Pablo, he's from Chile, and he said, these are his words, but he spoke English with an English accent because he went to an English boarding school in Chile, like an international boarding school. So he actually sounded like he'd like lived years and years and years in London. When he hadn't, but he was talking about, you know, he grew up in a house with like maids and things like that. And he said, and I quote, "The great thing about living in a third world country is that if you are even moderately wealthy, you live like a first world rich person."
Oh, okay.
And I don't want to.
That's interesting.
That's what he said. And obviously, terminology I'm not comfortable with in that. But whatever. He said that is how it was. So I'm guessing if you get. Because, I mean, these could well have been the kids of politicians or business people or whoever. And it's
potentially like just sons of doctors as well.
Doctors, yeah, people like that, lawyers, anyone who's done, you know, reasonable. Even just. I want to say businessmen. I don't mean like Elon Musk. I mean, just be anybody. You just sort of go, well, I actually have a haulage firm. Yeah. It's like, you know, oh, all right, nice one. Also, what apparently there was no real stage and they just had exposed wires running around outside.
Yeah, and they're like, what happens if it rains? And Kent just goes, that's how people die.
Yeah, I've got that written down as well. That's how people die. Yeah, it's great. but we fuck all else about that.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't rain. Everyone's fine.
Yeah, and presumably they said, no, you can't film at our country club. So they just went, we did that gig. So it's weird because that is like the closest NoFX technically have ever got to, you know, when everyone went mental because Beyonce played like a private Dubai gig for like $1 million, $1 billion or whatever. And everyone's like, you know, that's not a brilliant place ethically, right? And she was like, I don't need to listen to this. I'm Beyonce. And everyone went, oh, sorry. Yeah, right, you are. Well, it turns out, the closest NoFX got to that was being tricked into playing a country club in Ecuador, which is pretty good. Argentina, they played a good show in a nice venue, but they weren't allowed an encore.
Oh, yeah. The show promoter stops them from doing an encore.
He said that they waited too long between coming off stage and going back on.
They clearly went and did some drugs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously. But, I mean, how long do drugs take?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was thinking, like, yeah, but just once. I mean, I don't know the permit situation. He doesn't the club promoter never explains why he's not allowing them back on stage. So it comes across in the edit that he just doesn't want them to go back on stage and he's been pissed off with them. But I do wonder if it's like a noise policy. If curfew is 11 p.m. and they've let it get to 11:05, well, then you can't go back on stage because get a hefty fine, and
he'll
won't
be
able to
that. Yeah.
pass that fine over to the artist. So,
yeah,
you know, but that's
I wondered that as well. You know, it's
more fun to pretend that he's just not very fun, man.
Yeah, exactly. He's just something of a square. I think. I mean, to be honest, I mean, the thing is that you know for a fact if he'd have gone, okay, fine, one song, then they'd have done the decline. Like, there's no two ways about it. We know that's happening. I think it's possible that, I mean, starts off with Ecuador, nothing to show. Argentina, mm-hmm. nothing to show.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to fabricate something to warrant mentioning it again, to making up the graphic that said Argentina with the plane on it. You know, it's like, we need something for that. So then we get to the sort of the meat of the episode. This is the big storyline here is Peru.
Because Thingy says, Hefe says, we're going to get screwed in Peru.
Yeah, I think we're going to get screwed in Peru. Yeah, it shows it in flashback. It shows it in black and white to show that it was in the past. My first note here is Yolanda está, which means where is Yolanda, which is what this episode could have been called. So this is actually the first time we get introduced properly to Carlos, the South American tour manager.
Yeah.
What I love about this is they arrive at the airport, right? Super excited. All of the airport is like full of NoFX fans.
Yeah.
And they're like putting people in headlocks and stuff. There's a brilliant bit where they're not headlocks, but they like put their arms really tight around them and stuff. They're like super excited. There's a bit where Melvin literally like unwraps someone's arm from his neck like a scarf he hates. It's really, really funny. But this bit is my favorite bit of the whole thing. Is it's the first time Smelly gets recognized at an airport.
There's loads of clips of him just sat alone and then like Melvin and Mike being like flooded with fans and stuff. And then the camera pans around and Smelly's just sat by himself.
Yeah. And this is 2008. So I'm amazed they didn't slap a little Forever Alone meme on there. Finally gets recognized. And then not only does he get recognized, he starts got like really, really enjoying this being recognized thing. He has his own little Hard Day's Night Beatles moment where he goes, if I start running, do you think they'll chase me? And he starts running and they all run after him. And I'm like, this is brilliant. I'm like, I could have watched this for ages, just like you know, in Scooby-Doo and the hallway bit where they run across the door. I wanted to see that, but with Smelly and the fans, I thought that would be great.
I think what I've been really surprised with is how well this has aged. Like, this is a well-made reality TV show that you could show on television now, and it does hold up. Like, the use of just little filming techniques that they're using to like keeping the viewer engaged. It reminds me a lot of modern content in the way that a lot of content and YouTube videos are structured now. It's really well made for people with super short attention spans like myself. Like it holds up to 2024 standards. And I think that's so impressive when you remember what reality TV was like back in 2008.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's it. It used to be that, you know, Big Brother, you used to be able to watch that 24/7 on Channel 4, well, not Channel 4, but on like E4 or whatever.
Yeah, you could,
called. You know, you could watch it, you know, and no one's doing that.
I would, if I were NoFX, I would definitely pay an intern good money to go back through Backstage Passport and clip them into, you know, TikTok content and Instagram reels, because I do think that there's a lot of this stuff that works really well in short format, and I think if they put them all over their social media, I think they'd get some serious views.
I think you're right. I always feel like I sort of wanted a bit more, but I'm okay with longer form content. But yes, from that perspective, it does feel very modern. It doesn't feel like going back and watching something old. I think you're absolutely right. I hadn't even sort of really thought about that. So this is where, so the band's happiness at Smelly finally getting his recognition and all the rest of it is short-lived, because we meet Yolanda.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Hefe is in excellent shape now and he's doing all martial arts and stuff. But at this point, he's like the biggest he's ever been, and he's making fun of a woman who's just not thin.
It's
a little gross, but it's fine.
There are moments where like they're a bit too rude to Yolanda, particularly about her appearance. But then there's also like quite a nice moment where the crew are clearly reminded, and it's unclear who they are reminded by. It maybe the band, maybe Kent, but like there is this big effort of like, hey, look, the show is the show. Be nice to people.
Yes.
And there is a big, and I was really impressed with that, because I do think that particularly if you've traveled, you know, to another continent, and this, you know, 2,000 people have bought tickets to see your show, and there's not really a venue in sight, and the promoter doesn't seem to know what the fuck they're doing. Like, of course, frustrations are going to be high, and
of course
you're going to be mean. But like, I do like that, as much as, you know, there are moments where they're out of order, they do still at least make an effort to be nice to people. Because when you do work in events and you work, you know, with tour managers and venues and all of these different people who work from all these different companies that come together collaboratively to put on events, you have to at least try and be nice. Like, you know, you have to give people the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes people come across as rude, and sometimes that's just their personality. You gotta make an effort to make a connection and communicate, and their crew do that.
They do.
Better
judgment and will at varying different points. Yes, that's true. They were asked if they could have the patience of saints, and they really did, a battalion of saints. But they basically I think there's a line Mike says, which is, making someone cry isn't going to make the van get here any quicker.
Yeah.
And I think that it's like, well, yeah, that is fundamentally true. But yeah, because Hefe does this thing, is like, oh, Yolanda, boom, 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 boom. It's like, yeah, all right, mate, glass houses.
Yeah.
Fucking packing your Pop-Tarts and shit, mate, come on.
I don't know if you noticed, but there is a man next to you called Fat Mike.
Yeah, who is currently thinner than you. It's, you know, it's a very man thing, isn't it? Some fucking 20 stone slob sat there going, fucking hell, size of her, mate. Fuck off. It's like, what are you on about?
Yeah.
And it's not quite that, but it's not far off. But because someone says, do we even know what Yolanda looks like? And Kent says, well, someone in Argentina who knows her described her as a beast of a woman, so that may well be her. Now, the thing is that beast of a woman could mean her demeanor more than could equally be her demeanor. As it is, she seems to be the most sort of placid, I don't know. Yeah, we don't really hear her say anything. All we do is we see her spoken at by people. But she doesn't look particularly concerned or anything, so I have no idea what's going on.
No. I think she's just completely out of her depth.
Oh,
I don't think
absolutely
she's got
is.
The permits for what she's
done.
But as we've also mentioned as well, like, we're not sure if it's, I mean, I'm sure there are permits that you need to get, but there's also like a corruption issue, and you do need to bribe the right people on top of those permits. And one or both of those things has not been done in this case.
Yes, absolutely. So basically they're waiting at the airport because they wanted two vans, one to take the crew to set up the show, one to take the band to the hotel.
Really usual request as well, like really normal.
And nothing weird, right? And she's got one massive bus, and they're like, well, we didn't ask for this, we want something else. So this is where we meet Jay Walker, who is one of the crew, and he's like, he's super fucked off about it. Mike is like, be nice, optimistic. He's like, we're being nice and nothing is happening. And so the crew get it sorted. They get a car to take the band to the hotel, and they go off to, Mike predicts it's going to be a good show. That's another favorite bit of mine. He goes, I think this is going to be a good show. I don't know if he's being sarcastic, but it's really funny. The venue is literally nothing.
It's a field. Well, I mean, you know, what is a field in the desert?
If you threw some grass seeds on there and a shit ton of water, it may be a field eventually. It is described as the dodgiest place on earth. We meet Limo, who's the monitor guy. He was also their keyboard guy for ages as well.
Yeah.
and is now a barber, I believe. And he's like pointing out how there's literally no power. There is no source of energy to run anything. And it's just like, nah, mate. And then Kent points out that Yolanda just vanishes. Woof, like Kaiser Soze.
Yeah.
It just keeps on getting worse. Riot police arrive.
I like when Jay points out that even though it's the worst venue they've been on the tour, it somehow has the best fan.
Yeah.
But then only to turn it around and realize that it doesn't have a plug attached to it.
Yeah, it's just got two bare wires pointing out. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, actually, do you know what? Give the devil its due. This fan is going to be, oh. Yeah, it's pretty good. This is where we really sort of, we spend a lot of time with Lemo and Kent and Lemo and Jay, sorry. And yeah, they're just there going, well, this is, and Carlos as well. And they're just sort of stood around going, this is fucking ridiculous. There's not, this can't, you know, we need this to happen. And they're trying to get in touch. The band, I eat the dinner in a fancy restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
They're sat around. I think Melvin literally says, yeah, they're doing all that and we're deciding which wine to have with our dinner.
It's really bougie, the meal that they're going for. I remember there's one point where Hefe remarks, oh, that must be the sea bass. I don't know, like, they're just like...
Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, it is bougie. But again, I think we come back to my friend Juan Pablo's point about how a bit of money in a less economically stimulated country and you can really, really live quite spectacularly.
Yeah, one of the one of a lot of people's advice for generally getting the most out of your money in the Western world is if you literally just move to, you know, Thailand for 4 months of the year, because your daily overheads will just be lower and all your
plummet, yeah.
And, you know, like, you can get rent way cheaper. And, like, then it's really, as long as you can cover the cost of the flights and you can make it make sense that way, then you could actually go and live in Thailand for 3 months of the year and you'd spend just way less money.
Yes. And they're all reaping the rewards of that, while Carlos, Lemo and Jay, they're like, is it like some sort of something smeared on crackers or something, or like eating like chocolate, like a bar of chocolate between them.
Something
they're like
that.
they've got fuck all. They're like, having nice dinner, we're being nice. They spend every time just turning to the camera going, how nice we're being, look how nice we are. Stood in this fucking ditch being nice. Well, there's no gig. Fuck that. It's really, really okay. Hey, nothing's gonna happen, but at least we're being nice, right, guys? It's like,
yeah,
it's super salty. I remember having to get a glass of water. It was that fucking salty, right? They go, Kent gets a text saying 60% certain the gig's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Kent replies, we're in the restaurant, stop bugging me.
I missed that bit. That's so funny.
Yeah, he just goes, I've just told them this, and they're all like, oh yeah, nice one. It's it's really, really something. And this is when it actually gets sort of super excited. This is like the culmination of this particular story is that basically there's 2,000 kids outside, and they're all saying like, oh, I spent $20. I bought my ticket 3 months ago. Oh, you can't tell me it's not happening. Where are the band? What's going on? Mm-hmm. The crew are not allowed out.
Yeah.
They basically have to pay for the permits. One of them speculates, oh, Yolanda didn't bribe the right people, so now they're here saying we don't have permits. Or like you say, they didn't have the permits at all to begin with.
Yeah, it's unclear.
It could be either. I don't think they even find out.
No, I don't.
Definitively. So they're like, well, what are we going to do? They're not going to let us out unless we pay for these permits. And then what's going to happen is we pay for the permits and then we just leave. But we don't want to, you know, because we can't run a show here. It's impossible. So Kent leaves, and I keep forgetting. And this is when I was reminded that there was no smartphones.
Yeah.
Because he's like on the phone on his little flip phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, right, I just need to find a a van or any kind of vehicle. So he finds a guy with like a minivan, got like basically like a soccer mom car. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, he knows where we, like, I showed him the address and he goes, oh, I know where that is. And so, like, okay, right, well, I'll go there then. So there's Kent and a cameraman just sort of sat yeah. outside, look over the road. And this is when the kids are getting antsy. Like, it's going to go down. And we know that these cops are going to beat the shit out of these kids if there's a riot.
Yeah.
It's like the, all of that stuff is going to get super nasty. At this point, Smelly goes, man, I wish I was there. He's like, he's got it in his head that this would be the most fun. He's like, oh, man, can you imagine being in that riot? It's like, okay, I get when you give up drugs, people start doing skydiving and long distance running and, you know, and all these kind of things. I think Smelly did like motocross and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you've got to try and get that endorphin wherever you can. And yeah. presumably being in a riot would do that. So the crew basically bribe a local guy $200 to put everything in. He's got one of those open top sort of
yeah.
bit high sided trucks. They're like, they put everything in there, pack
including
it down
the crew.
As flat as they can. Yeah. And then lie the crew on top all flat. like they're being snuck out of fucking West Berlin or East Berlin, sorry. Like Checkpoint Charlie shit. And a cop jumps up the side to have a look in the top, sees like five men lying down in the top. He goes, wait a minute. The driver just floors it. The cop falls off the side.
Yeah.
The footage of it's hilarious. It's like Peru's funniest home videos. Just falls off the side. The guy just fucking speeds off. And they're there just like seeing the sky whiz past, like not knowing what's going on.
It is really impressive, the amount of fantastic footage and, I mean, even story that these episodes have, when obviously none of this is planned.
No, that's
you
it.
You can't script any of this.
I know. It's like, and there's that horrible thing of, with so much reality TV, I'm doing air quotes, I wasn't even doing that. Red can see I wasn't doing that, but that's what I mean by air quotes reality TV, is that so much of it is sort of fed little bits of this, that, and the other. You know, they're like, oh, well, maybe we could get this Kardashian to say this in front of this one, and that's going to start, that's going to give us 5 minutes of footage we can use or whatever. And you'd like to think that that wasn't the case with NoFX, but I honestly think that if you were just trying to book a big tour through South America without having really done that before, it's very, very likely you could just leave that and let it happen, because that sort of is what it feels like to me. But yeah, so the crew and the gear arrive at the hotel, presumably fucking ravenous,
yeah,
and all this stuff. They're fuming, but they're probably relieved. There's no gig, and then everyone's like, Is that Yolanda?
Oh, yeah, she turns back what? Up, which I thought was mad.
What is she doing here?
Again, like nothing.
Yeah, basically.
She just kind of stands there and listens to people shouting at her and then leaves. I don't know, but it's weird.
There's a bit where Jay is talking to the interpreter, or the translator, sorry, and he says, honestly, if you'd have been here half an hour earlier, I would have fucking strangled you. And then the guy looks at him and he goes, tell her.
Yeah. Well, translate it. Yeah.
Translate it, please. It's like, Mike is annoyed that there's no gig and stuff. He's sort of, you know, but it's mild compared to the rest of the crew.
I'm like a bit of me is like, did they book this badly so that they'd have fun stories for the TV show? Because like, if you've sold 2,000 tickets, like anywhere in the world, like if you are selling 2,000 tickets, you should be able to secure a venue if you are able to sell 2,000 tickets, unless you're cutting some serious corners.
Well, the thing is that I think they weren't selling it. They wanted to book it the way they used to, which is...
Yeah, so the promoters sell the tickets.
The promoters sell the tickets and everyone else, they go, right, okay, so we're going to be here, we're going to be there, you know, sort all this stuff out for us. Like you would do in Europe or the US or what have you. You know, there is a circuit. We know about this. You go, okay, well, if you're selling out this venue in Liverpool, you should be doing this one in Birmingham. They're like equivalent things, like, you know, that kind of thing, you know. Yeah, as I don't need to tell you that, but for the benefit of the listener, I don't think there's anything quite as formalized as that in South America at this time.
It could at well this be time, yeah. I think it must be quite different these days.
With the rise of social media and stuff like that, I imagine there are tighter links between, even though, I mean, South America is such an enormous piece of land.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely vast. But obviously, given that most of it shares a language, it's actually easier to... you know, that nowadays there will be some sort of circuit, but 2008, not really. There'd have been forums and stuff, but it wouldn't have been anywhere near as easy to, and also just access to the internet was less, as in you didn't have it on a smartphone, you didn't have it in your day to day, you know. So the following morning, they find out there's a couple of hundred kids outside the hotel, and they're all like, you know, oh, I just want to see NoFX. And like, they're so sad that it didn't happen. So Mike gets Kent to find him a guitar and goes outside and sings a few songs. Sings Franco on American. Mm-hmm. I mean, he might as well have not bothered, because they're just immediately screaming over the top of him. They are having the best time. It's like... And there's the guy, the lad whose guitar he borrows, and they all sign it. And he's like, he played my guitar. It's the best day of my life. I'm, you know, he's like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And it's really, really sweet. And Mike does seem genuinely moved by the experience, mm-hmm. which I think is... And I felt really sad by this, because I think that the sort of the optimistic... Mike Burkett that was in that might not be the one that we currently have in this timeline.
Know what I mean? Sure. Oh, that's sad.
Isn't it?
Oh, that's a sad observation to have made.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't thrilled when I had it. But...
How dare you make me come on this podcast and feel things, Eddie?
I know, but it is awful. And, you know, life happens and gets in the way, but there's an optimistic, I love being on tour with my friends kind of thing that he's obviously like actively putting a stop to as we speak.
I think that he knows that if they were to do this these days, it wouldn't be as much fun. Like they're older. Oh, yeah. I think that they are stopping touring because they know that they can't make touring as fun as it used to be. And why would you want to do less of something when, you know,
absolutely
get out on a peak.
Yeah, and I think that this isn't working for me anymore, I'm going to stop, is a super healthy attitude. It's actually a super healthy thing to do. Mm-hmm. So then they leave, and that is the last of that episode.
Yeah. They're good. I would definitely like recommend giving these a watch. Yes. Also, like similar to what we normally ask in our interviews, I think that Backstage Passport would be a really good way to get people into NoFX.
Interesting. Yes, I think so. I think that because Mike isn't just talking about drugs and S&M, it paints a broader image of him. Because he's got the family man who misses his family, but he's also, but this is my life and my job and what I do. And, you know, you get to meet everyone, you see their interactions and stuff. This was when I first really met the crew.
Yeah. And it's great that they actually have a proper relationship with their crew. And, you know, like they say, the crew is family, when they say they're not going to Colombia, they're like, this band is my family. Why would I bring my family to somewhere which I know is unsafe and that you haven't provided like your side of the bargain? Why would I bring my family there? And I think that's really nice.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that thing of, you know, the priority is everyone all right? Okay, let's go on to priority two then. And I think it's a very, it paints a very, very good picture of everyone. Even with, you know, I mean, it shows Mike to be sort of quite naive when he's talking about, hey, how's about we be nice to everybody and stuff. And ultimately he is right, but also he's not the one dealing with the majority of the shit.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to be nice when you're waiting to be taken to your nice restaurant and have all the lovely sea bass. Yum, yum, yum. Right. That's, that's easy. Compared to having to get smuggled out of somewhere that isn't a venue.
Yeah.
Nearly getting caught by the cops and then having to sort of like hightail it without really knowing where you're going or where this guy who you've just given $200. Because, you know, they're thinking there's a possibility that we give this guy $200 and load a load of equipment into his truck. He's just going to take us somewhere sketchy as fuck, extort more money out of us, and hawk all our gear. It could happen. Desperate times, desperate measures, desperate people. You know, it's not unheard of. So, you know, that's that's that. So yeah, so we'll be doing three more episodes on this first series.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is sort of done as a movie.
Yes, it is. Yeah, second series. Yeah.
Although I remember watching it as a series, but we can sort that out as and when. We've got a long time before we're going to be looking at that. So yeah, as Red said, punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of Backstage Passport, because we think it's proper good fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've not seen it, totally worth a watch. You can watch it for free.
Absolutely.
It's great. Yep, lovely. Well, let's carry this on in the outro. There we go. Sometimes it's nice to just put your feet up and watch a bit of telly.
Absolutely, yeah. We really enjoyed our trip through Backstage Passport Control.
Yes,
it's been great.
Weren't even held up, didn't get patted down, so that was good. We're well on our way. Good.
It's nice to talk about some NoFX where I don't have to be like, you know, it's okay, but they've made better stuff in this episode. You know, like, I love Backstage Passport. It's been a really enjoyable experience. So I'm glad to be positive on the podcast again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I absolutely agree. So, we're going to be doing more of that. It's exciting. This is exciting as well. When you listen to this, we will have recorded our two songs.
Yes.
We will have finished. In fact, if you listen to this on day of release, we will have mixed it yesterday. Laurie Myers and the Brews, they're the two songs that the Midlife Elite, that's us, and Midlife Punk Podcast, took us seconds to think of that name. The Midlife Elite are recording those. We have got people sending us their songs, their submissions.
Yeah.
Super excited. Other people, they're in the studio as we speak, doing stuff here and there. So yeah, we're very, very excited. We've got, this is coming together and we're terrified. Let us know, as Greg from Jersey. Hi, Greg. We mentioned in the intro, would you buy a CD of this? Would you buy a vinyl of this? Would you be happy with just the download? Would you be happy with just a Bandcamp?
Let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know what you think would be the best way to do this. We actually saw there's a NoFX tribute album, like a big, it's not specifically for Punk and Drublic, it's just NoFX in general. And it's lots of different bands, and I believe they are literally only releasing it on three colored vinyl.
Oh, wow. It's
a triple album. Yeah, so they're only doing that, which is fine, but I'd have thought surely even when you get vinyl, you get a download code with it as well, don't you, these days? Come on, let's not pretend. You're going to stick that on your phone as well, aren't you? You know, it's going to have that in a more convenient way. But, you know, who knows? We are basically the opposite. We are definitely going to be digital and hopefully physical as well.
Yeah, it's an odd time for physical media at the moment. Like, what is the dominant physical audio format? Like, I suppose it is technically still CD. You can still go into HMV and buy CDs, but who is doing that?
grandmas. I don't know. People.
It's either grandmas or children, isn't it? It's one of the two.
It's definitely not children. They don't buy anything.
You might be right, yeah.
That'll just be straight up streamers. Yeah, because I find that the thing is that you go into HMV or any record shop and there's like loads of vinyl everywhere. And you're like, are these new pressings of Appetite for Destruction? What? And like, it's like these 40-year-old albums, yeah, but on new vinyl. It's like, guys, maybe, you know, the new Green Day or whatever, you know, something like that. But it's like, what is going on? I'm absolutely baffled by it. But there you go. Cool. Well, that's been for today. So it's Punk Rock Elite Podcast. Tell your friends, tell your family. If you don't like it, tell your enemies. Make them suffer. And we'll be back next week with something else. Thanks so much, Red.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time. Bye, 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 bye. Thank you for listening to Punk Rock Elite. It was a Pick Scraped and Fruitcake co-production by Eddie French and Red Redmond. If you're not following us on Instagram or subscribe to the podcast, please do. The main theme and production was done by Eddie French. Please contact us at punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.